Our text tonight is Psalm chapter 62. Psalm chapter 62, entitled The Message, God Alone. I'm going to read through the psalm and then we will take a few things out of this tonight as we hopefully get some great encouragement and direction from this psalm. As I told you this morning, when COVID came out and all the different things and the economy and just rioting, all of these things, I have found that Psalm 62 has been my answer from beginning to end, and it still is this day and for other things as well. And I can't wait, make what's mine yours, but I pray that the Holy Spirit would help you to find great encouragement, great peace, and great comfort in Psalm 62. It is a great refuge for a struggling Christian who has enemies or difficulties or fears. Whatever you may think tonight, whether I'm convinced or not, I guess doesn't matter. It's absolutely true. This chapter is absolutely true. You can stake your life on it. You can do that. All right. Verse 1. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. From Him comes my salvation. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him? Like a leaning wall or a tottering fence. They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. Selah. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. For my hope is from Him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory. My mighty rock, my refuge is God. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. Selah. Those of low estate are they say translate it, but it's the same word only. Those of low estate are only a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances, they go up. They are together lighter than a breath. Put no trust in extortion. Set no vain hopes on robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart on them. Once God has spoken. Twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God, and that to you, O Lord, belongs steadfast love, for you will render to a man according to his work. Well, herein lies at least one major problem of much of Christendom. Many people are more than willing to confess that they believe in God, they have faith in God, they trust God, they have dependence in God. And certainly in the church, it's a common speech that we would say that we trust God. The problem that we run into in Christianity or in American Christianity is we're afraid to attach the word alone to that trust. We trust God plus. And that's what causes us great difficulty to say, in God alone, I trust. It's difficult to say, and then it's even more difficult to live out as an absolute reality. Because at the end of the day, the typical person puts their trust actually in many other things. And just examples, maybe it'll help you to set the tone. A man says he's going out to live on the land and he's going to, by his instincts, be able to survive off the land. He's going to trust his ability to live out there in the wilderness, but yet he takes his phone with him. You wonder how much he's trusting in his ability, right? The sea captain leaves the port and he says, I trust my ship, but yet he has a life jacket on the boat. The pilot goes down the runway trusting his plane, but yet he has a parachute in the cockpit. These things are signs that it's not trusting that thing alone. It's this, well, and just in case, then this other thing as well. The Christian trusts God alone, but he takes his pills, psychotropic pills for antidepressants and things of this nature. He reads his horoscope. He scratches his lotto ticket. He listens to Dr. Phil. He searches Google for all the information, and his moods go up and down based upon whatever the news last said. If the news is all bad, the mood's down. If the news says it's all good, the mood's up. And they're being affected by that. Why? Because in actuality, it's not full trust in God alone. Oh, that we could learn from David, who dealt with enemies from Psalm 52 to Psalm 64. Every one of them are about his enemies, either specifically saying enemies or a phrase that lets you know it's about enemies. This is a man under attack in the midst of all of his enemies. One of them is his own son, Absalom, who's trying to kill him in a war where 20,000 people get killed. There's a lot of conflict going on in David's life here. His life is hanging by a thread on many days. And you find him in the midst of all this chaos saying, "In God alone, I trust. Not my military, not Joab, not my mighty men, not these three mighty men, not any of those. I trust God alone." H.C. Leupold said it this about this psalm, and I think it's worth repeating. "There is scarcely another psalm that reveals such an absolute and undisturbed peace, in which confidence in God is so completely unshaken, and in which assurance is so strong." Assurance is so strong that in this psalm, you won't even find one petition. He didn't ask for a thing. He just trusts God alone. Verses 1 through 4, the first point, trust God alone. You ought to be able to remember that before the sermon's over. Trust God alone, verses 1 through 4. It's very difficult to do so here, but if you were able to look in the Hebrew text, there's several of these verses. Every one of them start with the word alone. It's almost like impossible to make that work in English. But about five or so times in the first eight verses, you have the word alone. He's emphasizing the singularity of his trust in God. And so alone is a very important concept. You see it there in verse 1, "For God alone." You see it in verse 2, "He alone is my rock." You see it in verse 5, "God alone." You see it in verse 6, "He alone." And then also you can see it in verse 9 if you change the word "but" to the word "only." Those of low estate are only a breath. Let me give you somewhat of an English rendering of the Hebrew phrases just to give you a little different taste of it. This is just my own rendition. It may not be accurate, but may be helpful. "God alone my salvation waits," verse 1. "God alone is my rock," verse 2. "God alone my soul waits," verse 5. "God alone is my rock," verse 6. "God alone rests my salvation, my glory. He's my mighty rock, and he is my refuge," verse 7. There's this concept, this reality, this truth that David, in the midst of all the enemy, in the midst of all those who would attack, in the midst of all of these dangers, he is absolutely content with God alone. He's enough. You don't need God plus, God in addition. You don't need anything else but God. He is sufficient to whatever the situation may be in your life. Now, think about this in the life of Jesus. Now, you and I know this happens to all of us. At some points, we're kind of pity party type people and we like to whine a bit. And so we go through these phases. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me. I have no friends. Nobody wants to do anything with me. And all these people are like this, and I'm just all alone. And we seem to be very depressed about it. And then we say things, we go even further and say, "Even if I died, I don't think nobody would know for a month anyways. And nobody would even care if I was gone." And we just talk ourselves into that type of thinking, and it just robs us of all hope and all joy, and it leads us into a type of depression. But if you'll look real quickly over in the Gospel of John and chapter 16, and if you look in chapter 16, you will find the Lord Jesus here and having a conversation with his disciples towards the end of the chapter. And he's making some things plain to them. He's telling them that he won't speak in figures of speech no more. And then he comes to verse 29 of John 16, and his disciples say, "Okay, we get it now. Now you're speaking plainly, and you're not using figurative speech. Now we know that you know all things, and you don't need anyone to question you. This is why we believe that you came from God." So that's what they say. Verse 31, Jesus answers them, "Do you now believe?" And that's the question for us tonight as we look at Psalm 62. Do you trust God alone? Do you really now believe? And then Jesus goes on and he says, "Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come. You're going to be scattered, each to his own home." And notice the last line there, the next line there, "and will leave me alone." Those who followed him for 3 years in the ministry, who ate with him and drank with him and walked with him and saw the miracles and heard the teaching, and they saw God in human flesh before their very eyes. When persecution came, his closest associates departed and ran and left him alone. Jesus understands what it means to be deserted by everybody. But it's not done. He says, "Yet I am not alone." That's what he says. Why is that? Because the Father is with me. It's a reflection of what David says in Psalm 62. Jesus is saying, "My Father is always with me. I am never alone." Now, just take this and receive it and you meditate upon it. But if you get in a pity party and you say that you're all alone, I'm telling you, you're lying. You're lying to yourself and you're lying to God, because God has never lost a child yet. He's never abandoned a child yet. He's never left one behind yet. He is always with his children. You will never be alone. If you get COVID, you won't be alone. You get cancer, you won't be alone. You get deserted, you won't be alone. You get fired, you won't be alone. Your spouse dies, you won't be alone. Your children die, you won't be alone. If everything is destroyed by a hurricane or a tornado in the next 5 minutes and you're left here alone, you are not alone. You can't be in a relationship with the Father. He will always be with you. Take encouragement from that and trust him. He is your closest friend. He is your best ally. He is the one who can meet your deepest need. He knows your heart better than you know it. And he will never give up on you. He has you. He carries you. He walks with you. He loves you. He has poured out his life for you. He will not give up on you. You are not alone. You say, "What if I die?" Then you will go home. And you will forever be with him. Who is God, by the way? Who is he anyways? The psalmist answers in these first four verses very clearly three things. Three things we need in an unstable world, in a world of rioting, a world of fear tactics on the news, all of these things going on. Who is God? I know one thing. He's a rock. He has never moved. A rock. He is solid. He is secure. He is immovable. I know from the Gospels that if you build on this rock, I don't care what comes, your house will not be destroyed. He is solid. He is strong in every facet. Everything of trust you put in him, he will never, ever be shaken. Not only is he a rock, who is God? He is your salvation. He's the one who saves your soul from hell. But salvation also, he is your deliverer. He delivers you through this. He delivers you through that. Could anybody in the room look back in your life and look to a difficult situation where you didn't know how it worked and yet you made it through because God is your salvation and he delivered you out of it? A financial crisis, a family crisis, all of these things you went through, and you look back and you say, "Wow, I can't believe it worked out like that." That's because God is your salvation. And not only is he your rock, and not only is he your salvation, but God is your fortress. Now, you go back in the old days and you go back to where they built cities and they built walls around the cities. You think about the Great Wall of China and back in the days where they would come and attack and they had these big walls. People on the inside had a certain level of safety. But I guess at the end of the day, any wall can be scaled and or torn down, or the gates can be destroyed. But how in the world is the enemy going to tear God up? God is our fortress. He's the one who has this protection around us. Do you honestly think that the world, the government, the devil, or all of hell combined, and all the nations in agreement can thwart the plans of God or overcome God? The God of heaven looks at all of the nations and laughs. There's not even a drop in the bucket compared to Him. And He is your fortress. Nothing, church, nothing can befall you except what God would bring to you for His own purpose. Nothing. There's no way that Satan can dethrone God. There's no way some political party or some leader around here can somehow change the will of God. He is your fortress. What does a right view of God produce in the heart of a believer? Because David's saying he trusts God alone. And he's saying this is who God is. He's a rock, He's my salvation, and He's a fortress. Well, what does a right view of God produce in your heart? Well, it's very simple. It produces a life that is not greatly shaken. Things happen. You see people. I've heard some of you say, man, people are losing their minds. People are going crazy. But the Christian should not be. They're not greatly shaken. Why are they not greatly shaken? Because they have a right view of God. And a right view of God will lead to this lifestyle that is not greatly shaken by the world. By the way, the New Testament would say perfect love casts out fear. Or you could take the psalmist somewhere else. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. How do you say that? Because he had a right view of God. Stability, calmness, peace, assurance, security. Think about Old Testament history. There's going to be a 7-year famine. Those fat cows are going to be skinny cows. 7-year famine. You know who the calmest person in all of Egypt was? Joseph. He was calm in the pit. He was calm when he was sold. He was calm when he was a slave. He was calm when he was falsely accused. He was calm when he was in prison. And he was calm when a 7-year famine came. Why? Because he had a right view of God. What is the enemy's plan? Attack, push down, destroy. You're like a tottering fence, a wall leaning, and it's trying to shove you all the way over to get the church and the Christian out of here. Attack, attack, attack. Deception, double-tongued, unstable way of the world. You want an application of verses 1 through 4? Here's my application. Selah. That's my application. Just think upon it. It's good. Second point, 6 through 8, trust God alone. Sounds much like point number 1. Trust God alone. Look at verse 5. There's a change in wording. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. But notice the next line is a little bit different than that line in verse 1. In verse 1, from Him comes my salvation. In verse 5, for my hope is from Him. And so now we find out that trusting God alone, that we know our deliverance or salvation comes from Him. And church, tonight, the hope that we have is a gift from God. We live in a hopeless world, but we are not hopeless because the God that we trust in alone gives us hope. I hope for heaven. I hope for Christ's return. I hope for a city whose builder and maker is God. I hope for these things, and they're real hope with tangible facts and promises to support them. God gives us this hope. I struggle with being downcast. I don't go around giddy and laughing all the time. I'm not necessarily that happy of a person. But being happy and having joy is vastly different. And there's a joy in the heart of the believer. Why? Because we have hope. I go out into the public and everybody's afraid. Everybody says this. And I get it. But the Christian should have some level of hope. We should be able to speak that hope because God has given us that hope. who is God anyways? Well, it's going to sound very familiar to you, I think, by this point. God is a rock. You say, well, he already said that. Well, he already said it, too. But God is my salvation. You already said that. Well, yeah, he said it too. And God is a fortress. Yeah, he said that twice. All of those three things he said twice about God. It's good to know for certain who God is. And it's the same question. What does a right view of God produce in the heart of a believer? I'll connect this stuff. If you see God rightly, then you ought to have these results growing in your life. What result is produced? A stable life that is not shaken by future events. Oh, when Y2K comes, all the computers are going to shut down. I'm not the slightest bit worried about it. Well, COVID is going to triple, quadruple, and everybody's going to die. I'm not very worried about it. Well, we're going to lose the election and the Democrats are going to take over. I'm not very worried about it. How can you say you're not very worried about it? Because I have a rock, and I have a salvation, and I have a fortress, and I'm trusting in Him alone. And I do not believe one iota of truth that the world has the power to set a different course than what God has ordained. He raises kings up, He tears kings down. As a matter of fact, the hearts of men are nothing more than streams in God's hand, and He directs them wherever He wills. And we can trust Him, even if He raises up Jezebel to lead. He's doing it on purpose, and we can still trust Him. Jezebel, or, you know, whoever. All right. Nancy Pelosi. I didn't say that. The world claims negative news quite often for future, and fear permeates the culture. But the Christian should not be shaken. Why? Because he knows who God is. Why is the believer not shaken? Look at the text. He has rested his soul. Verse 7. On God rest my salvation, my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. He's rested there. Vance Havner. You may not know Vance Havner, but he said, shipwrecked on God and stranded on omnipotence. Now, what a phrase. That's where we're at. Stranded on God, shipwrecked on omnipotence. What a phrase. And we find a fourth element that every one of you need to have tonight. Rock, salvation, fortress. And we find one more. God is our refuge. Psalm 46, a very present help in time of trouble. Refuge. Somewhere you can go without any fear and have absolute safety. Now look, I know this stuff happens. Here's what happens. People have a propensity to talk, and they talk and it makes them feel better. That's why people go to psychologists and they lay on the bed and they talk. Somehow it makes them feel better. I don't know how that works, but that's what they do. They do the same thing at the barbershop, right? You sit them in the chair and you start cutting the hair and they start talking. That's what they do. People like to share all that's going on. You go to a coffee shop, you pour some coffee in a styrofoam cup, it tastes like boot leather, and people just like to talk. But then when they do that, stuff happens. Gossip happens. Slander happens. Words go amok. People get hurt. Friends get divided. All those things happen. Why? Because you share information with people and you can't trust people. But there's something about us that likes to vent. And so then we go on social media. If we don't go to the barbershop or something like that, we go on social media. We can post everything there because we think everybody wants to know our opinion. And somehow if we post it all on Facebook, we feel better that we posted it. And some people get a kick that we stirred somebody up when we posted it. I've got great information for you. You can go to God and He's a refuge. You can pour out every emotion you have, every feeling you have. You can cry. You can laugh. You can pour out the innermost recesses of your soul and you can lay it all out before God and it will never be used against you in a harmful way. Just you can open up and you can be honest. You can be completely free with Him and you can share everything you're dealing with. God, I'm depressed. God, I'm hurting. God, I'm this. God, I'm that. You can lay it all out and He loves you. He listens to you. He ministers to you. He comforts you. He sustains you. But He never uses that information to hurt you. You can trust Him alone. He is a refuge. Go there often and pour out your soul to Him, because something happens and the Spirit of God, who is our Comforter, does something internally. I can't put into words, but something happens there. There's a lot of things going on in the church. There's a lot of things happening with people, and I think it's a result of talking to too much to men and not enough in the refuge with God. Go to Him. You can trust Him. And not only that, if you pour out your heart to Him, He hears you when you pray, and He has the power and the ability to do something with what's going on in your life. Application, Selah. The end of verse 8. Ponder, think, rest, meditate upon these glorious truths. Lastly, verses 9 through 12. Point number 3, trust God alone. Now, there's people that probably interpret this differently, and that's fine. I'm just telling you how I did it. Verse 9, there's two warnings here in verse 9 and verse 10. The phrases are somewhat weird at times, especially in verse 10, but this is my take upon it. Verse 9 is about man. Verse 10 is about money. Now look at verse 9. If you want an image, scales, you put weights and you weigh things and you do the scales, right? Everybody got a picture? Look this way. You put it on there. Okay. One side's heavy, one side's light. The psalmist says those of lower estate are only a breath. A breath don't weigh much. Those of high estate are a delusion. They're not even real. In the balances, these balances, if you put anything on the other side, they go up. There's no weight. There's no content to them. They've got nothing. Man is, it just don't have anything there. He says if you put the lowest state and the highest state together on that side, together they are lighter than a breath. No substance. No weight. No meat to chew on. Now think that through as you watch the news. As you look at all the things people are saying on the social media, as all the people in the coffee shops are speaking, and put that verse in your mind. If you add up every ounce of wisdom they have, they don't weigh more than a breath. And any word from God in this entire book would make them go up. Because there's content here. There's truth here. There's validity here. And so I would rather have one phrase of a scripture verse in a day than to hear 5 hours of a news broadcast. Because there would be more weight in that one phrase than all that men have to say on a given day. Because most of what they say, they don't even know what they're talking about anyways. But here, there is a well. There is truth. It is sweeter than honey. It is more costly than gold. It is truth unfolded here before our eyes. And it's weighty. It sustains us. It helps us. It encourages us. It sustains us through everything. We can hold on to a word. Even to the point, as you all well know, if your grandson's born near death, about big as your hand, you can look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7. You say, look, if God makes something crooked, He made it crooked, and we can still trust Him. You can do that, and you can find hope there. You can have your whole life shattered, and you can go to Psalm 46, and you can say, my God's a refuge. You can find those things there. Say, I don't care what everybody's opinion is. Lead me here, because man is lighter than breath. And in regards to money, verse 10, don't put any trust in extortion, getting money by unjust means, no trust there. Don't set any vain hopes on robbery. But add in there, don't set any hope on the lottery. If you got it, just corrupt you anyways. He says, if riches increase, it's a warning. Do not set your heart upon them. Trust God alone, not man and not money. Don't trust them because they are not trustworthy. And then the last phrase, verses 11 and 12. Once God has spoken, there are at least three possible interpretations of that phrase, once God has spoken. I'll give you all three and give you the one that I'm sticking with. It could be that God has spoken one thing twice. It could be that God has taught David two lessons, or the one that I'm holding to, God spoke once and David learned two things. This is what I think God spoke once. Trust me alone. And these are the two things that I believe David has learned. You say, why do you think David learned the two things you're about to tell us? Because they're in verse 11 and 12. And this is what he's learned. Number one, and I hope that you would learn this, that power belongs to God. What power? All power. Every amount of power there is, it is belonging to Him. The word we like to use in the theological realm, omnipotent. He has all power. The second lesson that he learned is that God, to Him belongs steadfast love. Some translations would translate it mercy. All mercy belongs to Him. All steadfast love belongs to Him. You can trust God because all power is His and all mercy is His. Now, as J.J. Stuart Perrone would say, if someone has all power and no love, it's brutality. If someone has all love and no power, it's weakness. But the God alone we trust has both. He has all power and He loves us. He has all power and He has all mercy. Whatever may happen in your life, whatever may unfold in this world with pandemics or whatever else may come down next, whatever comes, know this, learn the lesson. God has all power. He can stop it. He can annihilate it. He can create it. God can do anything with it, and you can trust Him with it. Well, what's going to happen with COVID? Whatever God says. When's it going to end? When God tells it to stop. Will it ever end? I don't know. He didn't tell me that. He just told me He has all power. And if He has all power, He can control it. He can keep it out of one state and give it to another state. If you don't think that's true, just go back to the Old Testament and you find the plague start happening to Egypt, but not over here to the Israelites. And it gets separated because He has all power. And so He can destroy over here and then He can show mercy over here because He possesses both. I encourage you, dear church, it is hard. I know it's hard. I know we're human. I know we have flesh. Just try. Just try for a week. Try for a day. I'm just implore you to put forth the effort. Instead of reading the amount of time you do on Facebook and the amount of time you watch the news every day, on the amount of time that you read news articles every day, what I'm saying to you is this. Read this book. Read this book. Read this every day. Take it in. Feast on this book. Meditate upon it. You say, how much I read? You read as the Lord directs you to read. You can read 20 chapters. You can read 2 verses. But read this book. I'm saying try spending more time in truth than in error. Spend more time in submission to the authority of God than in the opinions of men. Spend more time here than in the gossip chain of the world. Spend time here. And then when somebody says to you, what have you been doing? You say, I've been reading Psalm 62. Would you like to know about it? Instead of just saying, well, it's going to be hot. We all know it's hot. But does anybody know anything from the Word? Let us respond with that. And if we're constantly taking it in, then that will be the case. Meditate on what He's done in the past. Memorize scriptures. Pray. Minister to those in need. Lastly, the great calamities that befell Jesus are more severe than any we've ever faced. More severe than you can possibly imagine. And the disciples looked at Him, and you know what they said? Would you teach us how to pray? That's what people ought to say about us. They observe how we handle life. Could you teach me how to pray? And to have trust in God alone like you? Dear church, trust God alone. Let's take a moment and pray and prepare ourselves for communion. You pray and